Hello, this is Dee with the Vermilion County News for June 18th, 2018. We'll begin our reading today with the front page story entitled "Fun Without a Fortune: County Fair Offers New Events, Lower Prices" by Mary Wyckoff, Oakwood. After some struggles in the past, the Vermilion County Fair returns this year with a renewed sense of pride. Board members have tried to keep prices affordable for families while offering a variety of attractions. "The pride is coming back," Board Vice President David Winans said. Otherwise, he said, the volunteers wouldn't spend every weekend at the fairgrounds making sure everything is in tip-top shape. The fair will open Wednesday and run through Sunday, June 24th, at the fairgrounds off U.S. Route 150 west of Danville. For the second year, admission will be $6, which gives unlimited access to the carnival, butterfly tent, temporary tattoos, face painting, and other activities. Admission to grandstand events has been lowered by $1. Week-long passes are available in the office. "We're trying to make it affordable," he said. Last year, attendance was about 13,000 people, Winans said, which was more than double from previous years. He's hoping for 15,000 this year. However, he said, weather plays a 100% role in it. Charging a flat rate at the gate, cash only, and eliminating the carnival armbands, which could run $20, helped boost attendance, he said. As in past years, the fair's primary focus is to provide Vermilion County 4-H members with a place to display their knowledge. "I always get excited about the 4-H fair," said Kristen Puckett, program coordinator for 4-H through the University of Illinois Extension. "It's the culminating event, showcasing what they learned, and they receive feedback from the judges." She added, "It's an exciting time to show off all they've learned." Each year, she said, 4-H members in Vermilion County work diligently on completing projects ranging from scrapbooking to raising cattle, decorating cakes to showing swine, and everything in between. The completion of 4-H projects peaks at the fair, where the 4-H members will present their projects for judging. Awards will be given based on the knowledge they have accumulated in that project's area over the past year. Visitors will be able to view the completed exhibits in the 4-H exhibit hall and livestock in the barns before and after judging, and see how 4-H had an impact on members' lives, Puckett said. Judging at the fairgrounds begins at 2 p.m. Tuesday and will occur each day. Also, everyone is invited to attend the tractor and lawn tractor driving contest at 9 a.m. Wednesday. The Steinbau Showmanship Contest will take place at 5 p.m. Friday, followed by a special recognition presentation for 4-H members and the Friends of 4-H Livestock Auction at 6 p.m. New events. Winans said volunteers have been renovating the grandstand for the past year and a half by replacing the wooden board with aluminum seats. The fair board has received rehab money from the state for that project, which is almost done. The fair has some new events this year, including the free Wish Upon a Butterfly exhibit. About 600 butterflies will mingle with people in a 20 by 20 foot tent. The exhibit will be landscaped inside, and Barry's Garden Center is donating its services to landscape the outside. The exhibit, which is coming from Newcastle, Pennsylvania, gives people the chance to feed the butterflies by dipping a finger into a special juice. Fairgoers can view butterflies from the outside, while those inside can hold and feed the insects for more personal experience. Another new event is stock car races, which haven't been offered at the fair for 10 years. Winans said the races will be at 6 p.m. Thursday. Another attraction is the giveaway of about 33 bikes at 9 p.m. weeknights across from the office. The drawings will be held twice on Saturday and once or twice on Sunday. When people pay at the fair gate, they will receive an armband and the raffle number will be on the band. The bikes come in all sizes, from those for ages 5 through teen size. The talent show, which will be at 4 p.m. Saturday on the grassy area, costs $5 to enter, but it's free to spectators. People may sign up until 3:30 p.m. Also, Carl will have its Air Life helicopter on view from 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday. Its appearance, however, is contingent on whether it is needed for patients. A fun event is the Berkey's Equipment Farm Rodeo at 10 a.m. Saturday. Children can operate a skid steer with a mini excavator in the competition. Besides all the special events, Winnan said the fair can always use more general projects in competition in the 4-H building. People can check the website to see the categories. Winans, who's been on the board 9 years, said last year people came in from Terre Haute, Indiana, and Lafayette, Indiana. "Where can you find a carnival at noon Sunday?" he said, explaining why families travel the distance to attend the fair. Overall, he said, families can have fun and not spend a fortune. Our next article is entitled, "Two Dead After Shooting at Club," a staff report. Danville police are looking for Deontay N. Bright, 18, of Danville, in connection with a shooting early Saturday that left two people dead, according to Director of Public Safety Larry Thomason. A warrant has been issued for Bright's arrest. Police were called to the area of the Untouchables Motorcycle Club, 106 Commercial Street, about 2 a.m., with reports of shots fired. Officers found three male victims believed to have been shot. Thomason said in a release, the individuals were found outside on the grounds of the club and medical transport was called for. Two of the victims were later pronounced deceased, and the third was being treated for non-life-threatening injuries. According to Thomason, the two deceased are 23 and 17 years of age, and the injured individual is 36 years old. All are residents of Danville. The names of the deceased are not being released pending notifications of family by the Vermilion County Coroner's Office. The warrant with a $5 million bond was issued. Thomason said in the release, Bright is not in custody at the time of this release and his whereabouts are being sought. Our next article is entitled, Rape Crisis Center Needs Volunteers, by Mary Wyckoff, Danville. The Vermilion County Rape Crisis Center is looking for caring individuals. An intensive 40-hour training starts Monday and runs through July 10th at the center's new site, 923 North Vermilion Street. The training provides information that will help volunteers provide crisis intervention and medical advocacy to victims of sexual abuse or assault. You can be that voice they need to hear, or that hand to hold in the emergency room, said Tara Wright, Prevention, Education, and Outreach Awareness Director, and also Sexual Assault Therapist at the center. A volunteer lets a person know you're not alone. Volunteer opportunities include responding to crisis calls and providing support and advocacy at the emergency room for victims who seek medical attention. Other opportunities to help include fundraising, office assistance, community and prevention education, and court advocacy. Volunteers choose the times that they're available to help and the areas in which they're interested. Volunteers must be at least 18 years old, pass criminal and DCFS background checks, and have a valid driver's license and reliable transportation. Wright said the training schedule at this point is 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Monday and Tuesdays, June 18th and 19th, 25th, 26th, July 2nd, 9th, and 10th, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturdays, June 23rd, July 7th. The schedule is flexible depending on the number of trainees and their preferences. We're trying to make it around schedules of people who work full-time, Wright said. Our training is intensive. There's a lot of information on how to be helpful to a person in trauma. Right now, the Crisis Center has just 5 volunteers, and more are needed. Wright said, I want to keep growing our numbers. With more volunteers, that helps relieve the load on staff and thus prevent burnout. Wright noted that the person who's trained may be able to help someone in the community who's been touched by sexual abuse. If they come across someone in the community or someone they know, they can say, I'm here to support you, Wright said. People react to trauma, whether in the past or present, in different ways. She said the training will help volunteers respond to them in a helpful way. Once again, Tara Wright says, you can be that voice they need to hear or that hand to hold in the emergency room. A volunteer lets a person know you're not alone. Tara is the Prevention, Education, and Outreach Assist Awareness Director. Our next article is entitled Bipartisan Work Yields Gun Bills, the Associated Press, Springfield. Legislation aimed at curbing gun violence, some of which wouldn't have stood a chance just a few years ago, won approval in the Illinois General Assembly this spring amid scrambling to respond to mass shootings around the country. Ultimately, they're bound for Governor Bruce Rauner, who's proposed his own measures, in some cases similar to those okayed by Democrats who control the legislature. But they come with a price tag. Rauner's election year demand that capital punishment be reinstated for killers of police officers and mass murderers. He's given no indication whether he'd approve any of the plans separately, such as a 72-hour waiting period before delivery of any firearm, which is currently the law for handguns, but would increase from a 24-hour wait for long guns. Despite the call for a comprehensive package, spokeswoman Rachel Bold said proposals are arriving piecemeal, and staff members are reviewing them to see how they fit into a larger strategy for public safety. The wait period is the only one of three gun restrictions the legislature approved. That's so far been sent to the Republicans' desk, but each, including a plan to require firearms dealers to be licensed with the state, was endorsed by such large margins that they're liable to withstand gubernatorial vetoes. Rauner vetoed an earlier version of the dealer licensing bill this spring before it was retooled and approved by lawmakers again. It's an indication that while pro-gun Republicans are softening some positions on firearms in light of schoolhouse shootings in the past few months, Democrats, too, are not taking such a hard line at the bargaining table. And they're hearing a lot more from their constituents, said Dan Katowski, a Park Ridge Democrat who was a constant gun control advocate in the Senate for nearly 9 years until 2015. A lot of people who didn't really believe it could happen to them now, more than ever, fear that it's just a matter of time before something happens to them or their children, said Katowski, president and CEO of ChildServe, a family advocacy group. While lawmakers worry about violence, he said they're also aware that elected officials can lose their jobs if they continue to be on the side of the gun industry. Protests by teenagers and children demanding action after the Valentine's Day shootings in Parkland, Florida, motivated lawmakers, said Representative Kathleen Willis, a Democrat from Addison, who sponsored the gun licensing bill and the third key measure, which allows people to directly petition courts to confiscate guns from family members who pose a danger to themselves or others. None of it happened overnight, Willis said. She's worked on the legislation for 4 years, but groundwork laid in advance can pop an issue to the forefront when crisis strikes, and a bipartisan approach, adopting a give-and-take spirit in negotiations, can bear fruit. The waiting period, for example, started as a Democratic plan to increase the delivery delay only for what legislators defined as an assault weapon to 72 hours, while leaving traditional shotguns and rifles at 24. Republican Representative Grant Wehrle, an avid hunter from Naperville, voted for the resulting bill, saying it clarified the law. If I want a new shotgun for duck season, I'm shopping for that months in advance, Wehrle said. A short expansion in the cooling-off period won't hurt law-abiding gun owners. And if someone in a fit of rage can walk in and buy a weapon, that's probably a bad idea. The gun licensing bill, which Rauner vetoed in March as bureaucratic and burdensome to small business, was scaled back dramatically in the latest edition. It essentially creates a system requiring record-keeping and the threat that state or local police can inspect gun dealers generating complaints if they're not following the law. Our next article is entitled Illinois Officials Warn of Increase in Ticks, the Associated Press, Aurora. A county health department in northeastern Illinois has issued a warning about ticks. The Kane County Health Department has worked with the county's Forest Preserve District to put up displays at Forest Preserve locations to warn residents about ticks, the Courier News reported. The displays also provide tips on how to avoid getting bitten. The number of people contracting illnesses from ticks, mosquitoes, and fleas has been increasing for years, said Melanie Arnold, a spokeswoman for the Illinois Department of Public Health. Insect-borne disease has increased in the state by nearly 60% from 2004 to 2016. A relatively mild winter and high rainfall have contributed to the tick increase, said Katie Stover, a veterinarian with Hampshire Animal Hospital and Gilbert's Animal Clinic. Veterinarians are seeing more cases of the American dog tick, the deer tick, and Lone Star ticks, she said. Researchers have found that ticks that were once isolated to southern Illinois are now being found in the northern part of the state and vice versa, Arnold said. The University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine launched a program this spring called iTick to keep track of which types of ticks are found in the state. Not all ticks carry disease, but they can spread things like Lyme disease and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Preventative measures include wearing long-sleeved shirts, long pants, and boots when in areas where ticks may be present. Residents should also use insect repellent, check each other for ticks, keep grass short, and apply sprays to lawns and gardens to control ticks. Ticks on clothing or skin can be removed with cellophane or masking tape, while embedded ticks can be removed with tweezers. Our next article is entitled, Preaching Patience, Aftermath of Officer-Involved Shooting, Danville Leaders Hoping to Keep Town Peaceful, by Noelle McGee, Danville. When Ed Butler woke around 5:30 a.m. Tuesday, he instinctively reached for his cell phone. When he turned it on, he saw a missed call. It came in the middle of the night, and it was from Public Safety Director Larry Thomason. "I knew it couldn't be good," said Butler, president of the local NAACP chapter. His hunch was confirmed when he talked to Thomason. The director told him that while making a traffic stop on a man, who reportedly was armed with a gun and a suspect in a domestic disturbance, two police officers fired at him and the man was dead. "I thought, Lord, have mercy on the people who were involved and have mercy on our town," Butler said. In the wake of high-profile, deadly officer-involved shootings around the country, Butler was concerned about how the public would react, especially after learning the officers were white and the man was black. He was also concerned that once word is spread, outsiders would take advantage of the grief, confusion, and anger over Donathe M. Guilford's death to try to push their bias or agenda and to incite riots or other acts of violence among local residents. Some lady from Florida wrote, "Y'all need to burn Danville down," Butler said of a post he saw that night. Another person wrote, "He knew one of those policemen was going to kill one of those blacks sooner or later." People like that just assume it's the police's fault from the beginning. They don't care about the facts. Everybody's trying to get their assumptions out there first. "I think we all recognize the rumor mill is a big problem," Thomason added, saying it wasn't long before inaccurate statements started circulating on social media. "Anytime a group or individual calls for violence, that's a huge mistake. That doesn't solve the problem, it only creates more problems. That's why we wanted to get out front and make things known, because we're not trying to hide anything," Thomason continued. "I understand people are upset. I understand they want answers. But we're still waiting to get all the facts and information. That's all we can work with, the facts of the case, not rumor, not suspicions." At 7:30 that morning, Thomason and Mayor Scott Eisenhower met with Butler and other black community leaders to tell them what happened. They joined the director at a news conference a few hours later where he provided the same information. At 1:54 a.m., a 911 dispatcher got a call for a domestic disturbance at a residence in the 600 block of Sherman Street. During the incident, a man, later identified as Mr. Guilford, 34, of Danville, reportedly threatened a 39-year-old woman and a 43-year-old man with a gun, and both received some type of non-life-threatening injury. Two third-shift officers responding to the call, a veteran and a trainee, spotted Mr. Guilford's vehicle a few streets away on Harmon Street, and initiated a traffic stop. They repeatedly offered him to exit his vehicle with his hands showing, but he didn't comply. When Mr. Guilford finally exited the vehicle, he was holding a gun. At some point, the officers fired upon him, and he was pronounced dead at the scene. Illinois State Police were called in to investigate. The officers who weren't injured were put on paid leave, pending the outcome. Butler urged community members to hold their judgment until the investigation runs its course and the facts are revealed, and not to let any outsiders influence their thoughts and actions. Why didn't they tase him? On Wednesday evening, about 50 people gathered in front of the public safety building for a candlelight vigil for Mr. Guilford, the father of several young children. Some held signs that said, "Justice for Dee," "Why My Daddy," and "Black Lives Matter." Dean Williams said he and others wanted to remember his longtime friend and support his family, including Diane Carrington, Mr. Guilford's former foster mother. They were also protesting his shooting, which they called unnecessary. "I think it's crazy how the matter was handled," said Williams, who admits he wasn't there and didn't see what happened. "They had other solutions. They have tasers. Why didn't they tase him?" "A trained officer should know how to disarm someone without murdering them," said Brandis Connor. Some members of the gathering said they plan to continue speaking out. "The community is really in an uproar," Williams said. "We come in peace, but we really want answers." "We're going to remain peaceful," said Sharon Butler, Carrington's sister. She added that while people are upset, they're level-headed and don't subscribe to violence. "That's how Martin Luther King did it. He stood for equality, but not violence. We don't plan to get rowdy. That's not why we're here." The Champaign resident said her sister may have adopted Mr. Guilford at some point. Regardless, Carrington considered him her son, and she considered him her nephew. "He was good to his mother and good to his children," said Butler, who indicated her nephew had received bad news prior to the incident. "You never know what's going through someone. He was a human being, and he didn't deserve to die like that." Butler said she was praying for her sister, but also for the officers and their family. While tensions are high, Thomason said he believes no disturbances have occurred, largely due to the work the ministers, Three Kings of Peace, and others have made through their jobs and community activism. For example, Miller, who is also a Danville school board member, has mentored high school students for years as a lunchroom and refocus room in-school suspension monitor. Smalls and McCullough run the Summer Youth Basketball League at Garfield Park, which has mentored hundreds of youths and kept them off the streets and out of trouble. They, with Butler, also make up the Three Kings of Peace, which monitor and mentor Southview Upper Elementary, Northridge Middle School, and Danville High students, and partner with local organizations and churches to hold peace marches and block parties Saturday evenings in different neighborhoods. "We know most of our kids in Danville, and they trust us," Butler said. "We tell them, sit down and listen to your teachers. We give them the rundown if they get out of line and say, this is what's going to happen to you if you don't straighten your butt up." Last summer, Butler and his pastor, U. Pete Williams of Greater Shiloh Baptist Church, brought in East Moline pastor P. Wonder Harris, an ambassador with A Village of 1,000 Elders, to put on a workshop meant to teach community members what to do if they're stopped by police so that stops don't escalate. It was attended by about half the police and at least 50 community members. "I'm working with Pastor Parks to put on another seminar by the end of this summer." Butler said the relationship with city officials has been a two-way street. "We've brought things to the chief and the mayor, and they've listened. They pulled in one officer who was trying to make a name for himself and being too belligerent and aggressive with people. I believe in doing things by the book. I've got confidence that our chief and mayor will do things by the book. If it turns out to be the policemen are in the wrong, we'll deal with it accordingly, and if the young man did have a gun in his hand, we'll deal with that accordingly. The important thing is, whatever the outcome, we have to keep order and peace and try to move forward and get stronger." And now we'll turn to our obituaries. The first is for Pamela K. Rickauer, who died May 26, 2018, after a long, hard battle with ovarian cancer. Any donations in her honor can be made to Hospice Hearts of Champaign-Urbana. Barbara Colleen, 85, of Lincoln, formerly of Danville, passed away Tuesday, June 12, 2018, at Copper Creek Cottages in Lincoln. A visitation will be noon to 1:30 p.m. Tuesday, June 19th at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East William Street, Danville. Service to follow at 1:30 p.m. with Pastor Chris Lawler officiating. Burial will follow at Spring Hill Cemetery in Danville. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made in Barbara's name to Catlin Church of Christ, 715 West Vermilion Street, Catlin, Illinois, 61817. Coral Jean Collings Toon, 80, of Conway, Arkansas, formerly of Braidwood, Bolingbrook, and St. Anne, Illinois, passed away August 5, 2017. A celebration of life was held Saturday, June 16th in Arkansas. Interment will be at Bethel Cemetery, Alvin, Illinois. Family and friends will gather at Rossville Family Restaurant following the service. Ray Charles Engel, 64, of Danville, passed away Monday, June 11, 2018, at Danville VA Medical Center. A visitation will be 11 a.m. to noon today, Monday, June 18th, at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East William Street, Danville. Service to follow at noon with Pastor Michael Heidel officiating. Burial will follow at Spring Hill Cemetery with military honors by American Legion Post 210. Glenn Edward Meeker left this earth on June 14th after a long, hard battle with declining health. A gathering of friends will take place on Wednesday, June 20th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Tilton Community Center at 612 West 5th Street, Tilton. In lieu of other expressions of sympathy, charitable donations may be made to the American Diabetes Association to help improve the lives of people affected by the disease. John Patrick Sheehan, 68, passed away Tuesday, June 12, 2018. Funeral Mass will be at 11 a.m. Tuesday, June 19th, at St. Mary, Mother of the Church, in Garner. Burial will follow in historic Oakwood Cemetery, Raleigh. A reception will follow the committal service in the Fellowship Hall at the church. Charles Gordon Matthews, 70, passed away at home in Short Hills, New Jersey, on June 8, 2018. A memorial service will be Monday, June 18th, at Calvary Episcopal Church, Summit, New Jersey. Interment is private. The family prefers donations to the National Psoriasis Foundation in lieu of flowers. Bernice A. Carroll died Thursday, May 10, 2018, in Lafayette, Indiana. Larry Wayne Lyman, 62, passed away Tuesday, June 12, 2018, at the University of Chicago Medical Center. Visitation will be Monday, June 18th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East William Street, Danville. There will be a memorial service at 6 p.m. following the visitation. Memorial donations, or in lieu of other expressions of sympathy, may be made to the American Cancer Society or the American Lung Association. Dorothy M. Geddes, 93, formerly of Watsika, passed away at 10 a.m. Thursday, June 14th in Hoopton. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, June 18, 2018, at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street, Hoopston. A graveside service will be at 10 a.m. Tuesday, June 19th, at Maple Grove Cemetery, Milford. In lieu of other expressions of sympathy, memorials may be made to any local public library or to the donor's choice. Don A. Goebel, 63, of Danville, died at 9:18 p.m. Wednesday, June 13th, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete. Gail Teagarden, 63, of Rossville, died at 5:25 a.m. Friday, June 15th, at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete. This has been Dee with the Vermilion County News for June 18th, 2018. I hope you have a great day, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.